welcome to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea. We are here today with a friend of mine. I have done his podcast, and he has done mine before. And he was making some interesting remarks today on Facebook. So I just thought, I gotta have Andrew March back on my show again, because we've had such fun. Andrew is a Protestant pastor. He's not a Catholic. Calvinist guy, really, just between you and me, he's a really crappy Calvinist, and
it's all the Blessed Mother stuff.
Yeah, it's the Blessed Mother stuff. Yeah. It gives his flock the willies too. So we may wind up talking about that at some point. I don't know, but anyway, I just thought I would have Andrew on the show. Andrew, give us your background, because you can do it better than I can.
And for the purposes of the podcast and the current cultural milieu we find ourselves in, I'll go back to the beginning. I was actually born in Kingston, Jamaica. Did you know that?
I did know that because you mentioned it. I did.
I'm an immigrant, Shay. Y'all better get as much out of me as you possibly can.
Okay.
You never know, those ICE guys might show up at the door and...
Well, you know, the whole thing about, you know, the reason that the Catholic Church supports... You know, immigrants, it has been, you know, in opposition to the terrible Republican healthcare plans and so forth, is because, as we all know, that's where the real money is. Backbreaking labor and single mothers, you know. That's
yes, and cheap, for the cheap as well.
that's where the money comes from, man. You know, and so that's why the Catholic Church supports all those guys. Anyway, so Kingston, Jamaica,
emigrated here when I was four.
Okay,
I was ensconced by Calvinists. I was predestined to be a Calvinist, so okay. Now I'm a Calvinist.
Okay.
And a couple friends of mine, we started a church, and there we go.
Okay. and you live in Maine. So you're like...
I live in Maine?
Yeah, so I'm talking to you. You're in the future. You're 3 hours in the future from me.
Yeah, I'm 3 hours in the future, and it's just as bad now as it was in your past.
The sun has already gone down there. Trump is still
the president.
The sun's gone down there, but it's still sunny here, so, well... Sunny.
The sun went down on us in November.
Okay. Yes. Yes. So clearly you are a zealous pro-abortion Democrat then, right? Because.
No, I'm actually a pretty zealous pro-life. I would consider myself to be conservative. The local media here has named myself and my fellow elder as being actually extremists on the right wing side. So,
but
I'm
how can these things be?
Right-winger.
Yeah, how can these things be though? Because you've been critical of Donald Trump, so that's not possible. And you are a zealous pro-abortion Democrat. That's what I think.
Who hates America?
Who hates America? That's right. So anyway, fun to have you on the show today. You were. You were remarking earlier today on a couple of points, and I thought, this guy's got his, you know, I keep forgetting, this guy's got his head screwed on straight, and he says hilariously funny things. So naturally, I thought, I got to have him back on the podcast. So the first time I talked to Andrew, he asked me to be on his podcast, which is called The Hit It.
Cell 53 Radio.
Yes, Cell 53 Radio. So you can go out there and Google that and listen to his vast archive of podcasts. And so he had me on his show, and we wound up talking about a lot of stuff. It wound up being a podcast that, I mean, the recording itself was 3 hours long.
Yeah, we cut it in half and...
Yeah, so that was fun.
And Blessed Mother got her own show, so that's
Blessed
important.
Blessed Mother got her own show. And you may notice that, gentle Catholic listener, that one of the things that Andrew March is keen on is the Blessed Mother, which you know, is that makes for exciting homilies for his flock.
Yeah, I was doing John 2 recently. I'm going through the Gospel of John, and I was talking about, you know, the famous command, "What do whatever he tells you to do."
Mm-hmm.
And we're talking about, and I said, "Listen to your mother." And I the theologians in the audience were like, hey, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
I already articulated my position on the show. You know, I'm a Bible guy. It says from now on, all nations will call me blessed.
Mm-hmm.
And, I'm not going to make her a liar.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
She's a blessed mother. It's that simple.
That's right. That's right. And, you know, the only other time that she shows up in John's gospel, is at the foot of the cross where Jesus says to the beloved disciple, and by the way, that's John saying, "I'm talking to you," to every reader.
Yeah.
John is saying.
Yeah, everything Jesus says in the Gospel of John always has a deeper meaning.
Of course.
Principle.
Yeah. And there's two things that you can learn from that scene at the foot of the cross. Well, there's a lot you can learn from that scene, but two things you can learn from that scene at the foot of the cross are, Mary's perpetual virginity, because, you know, if Jesus had siblings, he would not have entrusted her to John. He would have entrusted her to siblings. That's what you did in first century Judean culture. I'm just throwing that in there. And then the other thing, of course.
Of course, the Protestant answer would be John 7, which says even his own brothers didn't believe in him. In which case,
for different,
the
for
priority different, would be the spiritual thing.
For but different yeah, values of the
no,
world.
But I hear what, no, I'm with you. Go ahead.
Yeah. But of course, yeah. Well, anyway, we can go into that at some other time. But yeah, the other point is that when John speaks of the beloved disciple, yes, in the literal sense, he's talking about himself. But John wants us to understand that you, listener, you, reader, are the beloved disciple. It is to you he speaks when he says, "Behold your mother." And that's why that's.
I agree with that.
Right. Yeah.
Without reason.
Yeah, and that's why
that's
why that scene is recorded in John. John is not telling us that because he just thought we might be interested in the, you know, trivial details about how domestic arrangements were made for Judean widows. That's not why that scene is there. That scene is recorded for a theological purpose. So anyway, Andrew and I, you know, we bonded over that, and we bonded over a bunch of other things. So I just thought this would be fun to have you on the show today. You were observing something that I've noticed a lot. It's partly a baby boomer thing. I speak with shame as a baby boomer.
I guess I'm a millennial. I'm 33. Is that
you're just a kid.
Did I just make the cut?
Yeah,
being a millennial.
Yeah, okay. I think so.
All right.
I'm not sure what the cutoff dates are, but I think that does make you a millennial. But you know, you were talking about the habit that's being expressed everywhere in our political discourse of refusing to take any responsibility for anything while pretending to take responsibility. You know?
Well, of course. If you've been blessed with having children, this is one of the fundamental exercises that you go through all the time. When you tell your children, you can't do a blame-pology. And we all know what a blame-pology is. It's where you say, "I'm sorry. If you would just stop being so dumb, I wouldn't punch you in the eye." That's a blame-pology.
Okay, yeah.
You know, your seven-year-old goes, I said I was sorry. I took responsibility. Right, and then you proceeded to go ahead and blame your brother for why you gave him an eye jammy because he was so annoying and stupid.
Yes.
This is not taking responsibility.
It's also the that goes with the "I'm sorry if you were offended" blame apology.
Yes.
Which is like I didn't do anything wrong. You know, it's just that
you're so weak
yeah.
that in this apology, on top of the offense, the original offense, I'm going to dish you as I'm apologizing.
That's right, for being thin-skinned and hypersensitive.
Right.
I love
the snowflake thing that the right wingers say, you know, oh, you snowflake, are you triggered, you snowflake? Of course, we just saw all of them get triggered yesterday.
Yes, massive triggering. And I think there will be more triggering this evening happening. But let's right. begin at the beginning. You were talking first about the new book that's out, which contains
the question
and the answer are both contained right on the cover. The title of the book is What Happened?
You've got to be very talented to pull that up.
Yeah, and the answer is Hillary Rodham Clinton. You don't need to read the book because they're, you know.
I didn't even catch that. Yeah. What happened? Hillary Rodham Clinton. Question, what happened? Answer, Hillary Rodham Clinton. So I started off the video, really repenting for my Schadenfreude, which of course is the, you know, you love your neighbor, you really do, but there he is and he's tumbling down the stairs, you know, his shoelaces were untied, and he tumbles down the stairs and you peek through the, you know, your blinds to watch him tumble, and you take that little, you know, adrenaline shot of glee that happens when your neighbor tumbles down the stairs.
Right.
This is sounding worse as I'm describing it, but this is Schadenfreude.
Yeah.
Well, I've been watching a bunch of far leftist media all of last week, and they've been having a conniption about Her Grace, Hillary Rodham Clinton, because of her book, in which, and I've been listening to it because some of the audio is available. She says, "This loss was completely mine," she says. And I was like, whoa, she's growing. I mean, you can always grow.
Right.
And then she proceeded to go on to bloviate for an hour and a half about how wrong Bernie was. You know, Bernie Sanders, you know, who had the audacity to run a vigorous campaign.
Right. He interrupted the coronation.
Right. He didn't bend the knee and show complete fealty to the Clinton dynasty.
Right.
So he was this horrible person. And then he wouldn't concede the primaries early enough. Of course, Hillary, nobody, you know, everybody forgets about this, but Hillary, when she was pressed as to why she wasn't conceding early enough to Obama, one of the reasons she gave was because Robert Kennedy was assassinated in June, which essentially means, I'm staying in the primary because who knows, Obama could be assassinated.
Wow. I never heard that one.
Oh yeah. I can send you the link later. Of course, that didn't make the book. She was angry at Bernie because, Bernie, and the Bernie bros, you know, Bernie Sanders is like the least sexist misogynist candidate we've ever seen, including Hillary. But somehow that was also his fault.
Mm-hmm.
The misogyny of the, Bernie Sanders, crew. Of course the Russians. You and I both know that Vladimir Putin is the real reason that Trump is in office.
Well,
James Comey.
We'll find out about that.
Goes on and on. Right. All right, so she just goes on, and it was just hilarious to me because the leftists are losing their minds saying, hey, this is your fault. You were the worst candidate in all of history. You were just terrible.
There's a real
argument. You lost because you were a horrible kid.
Well, you know, when you lose, the thing is when you lose to somebody like Trump, you know,
it's an all-time humiliation.
How can you possibly have lost to that guy? You know, it just comes back to that, you know, and that's it. And she, you know, she ran, you know, The thing about the left is the left treats the minorities in their base the way that the right treats pro-lifers in their base. They say,
absolutely,
you're screwed. Who else are you going to vote for? So I don't have to care about you. And that was exactly
the message
that she telegraphed. And the thing is it turns out that minorities in the Democratic base don't have to vote for the Democrat. They can always not vote, which is what they did.
It's funny.
She ran a terrible campaign.
We sort of were. Well, I mean, you know, Bill was sort of this more. There are a whole bunch of books that are out right now that are trying to explain this colossal defeat. And in one of them, Hillary had basically taken this new age strategy, which is we're going to crunch numbers and we're going to, use the analytics and all this. And Bill was saying, man, let's just do regular politics, hit the streets, press flesh, kiss a baby. Let's go. And she wouldn't do it.
Listen to that guy. He is a mess. You know, say what you will about Bill Clinton, but that guy is a master politician. He knows how to campaign.
Of course.
And,
she wouldn't listen to him.
She wouldn't listen.
So she thought.
She was the smartest person in the room, you know?
So it's just the horror. And I'm still trying to analyze myself as to why I took so much glee in the rage of these far leftists. And maybe it's probably a racial thing where they just assumed my vote. Because he's not going to vote for a Republican. Right, I'm not. But what if I don't vote for you? And, So I was listening to this, and then I get this news clicker on my Facebook page, which says that Donald Trump vows to totally destroy North Korea. And I said, no, he wouldn't say that. Because the thing is, Mark, this happened on the previous show, right? Where we were talking about the healthcare and the pre-existing conditions.
Right.
And I said, let's look this stuff up before we say stuff. Cause I'm very big on that. We got to verify. Yeah. I said, there's no way he said that about North Korea. No way. So I clicked on the link and, there it was, our president at the floor of the UN, Mark.
Yeah.
And I said, this is worse than the little blurb said. And I said, well, he's not going to say that. So then he says, if Kim Jong-un doesn't, you heard the quote, we will be forced to totally destroy North Korea. And, I was just blown away. And then he adds the Rocket Man phrase.
Right.
And I said, this is
third grade.
You had Lion Ted, you had Little Marco, you had Crooked Hillary. You have all these nicknames that he has for people that he doesn't like.
Right.
And instead of realizing, okay, the election is over, I won, I appealed to the least common denominator in my country and got myself elected, but that's where this ends.
Right.
This was not a political tactic. See, this demonstrates that this was not a political tactic for Trump. This is Trump. This is who he is. And so he called a guy who is, Mark, Kim Jong-un is literally deified in that country.
Yeah. And he's nuts.
And he called him Rocket Man.
Yeah.
In front of the whole world.
Yeah.
And threatened to totally destroy 25 million people, Mark.
I know.
25 million people live in that country.
Yeah, it's like, they're just 25 million Korean people.
Right, yeah. We've talked about this before, the so-called pro-life right-wing evangelical Republicans.
Why? Catholics.
And Catholics.
You don't get all the glory.
Horrified. Yeah, I don't get all the glory for collective apostasy in our nation.
Yeah.
Let's share. This is ecumenism here.
Yes.
But you would assume, people who trot out the 60 million abortions number, 3,000 abortions a day number, you would assume that these individuals, who hear of 26 beautiful image bearers of God and threatening to annihilate them, you would assume there would be a massive evangelical outcry. Wouldn't you, Mark?
Yeah, you kind of would if you hadn't learned what I've learned.
Of course, the other problem with Trump is that he says so many things, like the one right after the other, that you almost don't have the time to be angry at everything. Because once he says one thing that infuriates you, a second later will say another thing that will infuriate you. And you don't have enough fury. You only can hold one, so much fury in one soul.
Yeah.
So he will, and then you just start laughing, which is the level of psychosis that Trump has driven me to. Yeah. I just start laughing at everything he says.
Yeah. Well, that's a smart thing to do, I think.
It's too much.
Yeah.
So I'm bizarre. Watching this. I'm like, yo, did this. He just threatened to kill 26 million people.
Yeah.
And he called the guy rotten. And did you see Rocket Man? Now I'm falling into it. Did you see what Kim Jong-un said about Trump?
He called him a dotard, right?
Right, he called him a dotard, right?
Yeah.
He said he was mentally unstable, unfit to leave. I mean, well. It was just, but it was the difference between Harvard and DeVry as far as like level of insult and sophistication, right?
I call it the Pee Wee Herman dialectic.
Yeah,
I knew you were, but what am I?
But yeah, he had way more of a mastery of the English language, and his insults were way more dignified than Trump's were. And, you know, say what you want about Obama, okay? But if I said, okay, hey, Obama said something and Kim Jong-un said something, which is which? You would know immediately, okay, that's Obama, that's Kim Jong-un. Now, if I were to say to you, okay, Mark, somebody just threatened to completely destroy a nation.
Uh-huh.
It was Kim Jong-un, and it was Trump. Who is it?
Yeah. Yes.
You wouldn't know. And if you guessed, you'd probably be wrong. You'd probably say it's probably the psychopath in North Korea.
Yeah.
Kim Jong-un didn't even threaten to destroy all of America. He didn't even do that. He just went after Trump. He just kept it personal. Whereas Trump threatened this guy's entire nation.
Yeah.
This is our president, Mark.
This is our president. He's a baby Christian, Andrew. And growing in grace.
Who said that, Paul?
That was James Dobson, actually.
That's right. James Dobson
said he was a baby Christian. So, you know, has he ever been wrong? And so that was, you know, that was the first thing. And then, you know, so, and then this morning, you know, we're getting tweets, which are being interpreted by North Korea as an American declaration of war. And when you read the tweet,
right.
It's, you can see how somebody would take that as a declaration of war.
yes, of course.
You know,
we're doomed. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, but, you know, in the meantime, and, by the way, I just want to throw this in here. A lot of people, we're not hearing as much about this, as we heard about Houston and Florida, but Puerto Rico's infrastructure was obliterated by Maria,
right.
Hurricane Maria.
Yeah.
And part of the problem with obliterating the infrastructure, is that you need electricity in order to have water that's not full of cholera and other bad things.
Right.
And so consequently, Puerto Rico right now is essentially, it's running out of water. It has this, I don't know what the population of Puerto Rico is. I'm sure it's in the hundreds of thousands, something along those lines. And so right now, what Trump is focused on is the imminent danger to the United States caused by black guys kneeling.
Right.
At a football game. That's the crucial issue that we face right now, while hundreds of thousands of people are threatened with dying of lack of water. And
as well as the sanitary conditions that also.
Right.
And of course, Obama and Bush are actually leading the way to try to help out in Puerto Rico. I just read an article on The Atlantic about those two.
Yeah. In fact, all five presidents, all five living presidents are behind this, while our actual president
is going after
But black guys. Yeah.
And their mothers.
And their mothers, which was, you know, that was a smart move too. Always a wise move to attack people's mothers. If you're the president of the United States.
So there I was, Mark. I was recovering from the Rocket Man thing. I've been spreading this all my, I couldn't believe it.
Uh-huh.
You know? And I got my brother, you know, former Marine, and I said, did you hear what Trump said? He goes, man, what did he say? And I said, this dude said he's gonna totally destroy North. He's like, oh man, he didn't say that. I'm like, bro, I'm telling you, he said it. So we're recovering from this, and then I see another Facebook ad or blurb, and it was you. It was you and somebody else that posted that, and you said something about Kaepernick, and I messaged somebody and I said, hey, can you fact check this real quick? And they said, oh, he didn't mention Kaepernick at all in the speech. So I went back to you and I said, hey man, make sure you're not getting hit by fake news, right? And then you responded to me like, dude, like, what's wrong with you? So
I was more polite.
No, I mean, I deserved it in that situation.
Uh-huh.
So I said, okay, let me see this thing for myself. And he did it again. He was worse than I thought he was. You know, he's more than you can ask or think.
Yes.
Is Trump. It's worse than you can ask or think.
Yes, it's true.
I watched this thing. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, yeah, he gave a speech in Alabama, strangely.
Right.
You know, in which he said, you know, this is a man who could not bring himself to condemn people who marched under the banner of a swastika. And when he did, it was one of these, well, you know, there were some bad apples among the Nazis, but there were also some very fine people, and I quote, very fine people in that group.
You stereotyped the whole bunch of Nazis.
Not all Nazis.
Ku Klux Klan apples.
Ku Klux Klan. We must be judicious about these things, but when it came to... black guys kneeling down.
Yeah.
He called those guys sons of bitches.
Fire them.
And they need to be fired. We got the President of the United States demanding people lose their jobs, you know.
Unbelievable. It was madness. I was like, it would have been, honestly, Mark, it would have been better if he would have said something about Kaepernick, who's essentially out of the league, right?
Yeah.
This dude is talking about guys that are currently in the league, and the whole lot of them.
Yeah, and he meant anybody. Yeah.
Yes. And now, of course, the ironic thing is, if he would have had any sort of political foresight or any insight into human nature, he would realize that a lot of the black players were on the fence. Like, for example, in Maine, you know, New England Patriots are the team, right? Mm-hmm. There were no New England Patriots that took the knee last week.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, there was a black football player, Kenny something or other, who was basically saying, hey guys, did you forget the movement? Did you forget? Like, everybody's just going on. And we were pretty much moving on from this whole kneeling thing.
Uh-huh.
And then in the Qadr of Allah, or the providence of God, Trump goes out and inflames and reignites the movement in a way Colin Kaepernick never could.
Right, exactly.
This lack of self-awareness and misunderstanding of human nature is amazing to me.
This brings up something that I was thinking about today, because I begin sometimes to suspect that I have made a serious misjudgment of the man. In this way, although he bills himself as, you know, a captain of industry and a genius mogul, you know, negotiator and a guy who understands how to make deals and all the rest of it, you know, if there's anything to be learned from his history, is that everything that he touches turns to crap all the time.
That's true.
He has really bankrupted four casinos. How do you bankrupt a building that it's just a big box where people walk in and hand you money? And you keep their money. How do you lose money at a casino? But he's done it four times. Trump Airlines, Trump steaks, Trump vodka, Trump University.
Trump University. Yeah.
And today, Trump care.
How do you feel at vodka? How do you feel at vodka? Serious question.
Especially a guy with that many ties to Russia, you know?
Yeah. Ben is making millions off vodka. Puffy.
Yeah.
You know, all these rappers are making millions off of vodka. And Donald Trump, you figure, how did he fail at that?
How do you fail at that? But everything that he touches fails. And so, you know, today, Trump Care just met its third death.
Yeah. It's poetic. It's poetic that that loser, John McCain, John McCain, the POW.
Yes.
Who refused to get sent home early. Because he wanted to be treated just like his brother. So he was tortured excruciatingly.
Yes.
The saints almost. That guy he called a loser.
That guy he called a loser. A draft dodger calls that guy a loser, you know, and spits in the faces of Gold Star families, you know. And that guy managed, you know, in this bizarre way to, you know, reignite this whole thing, you know, so yesterday.
It was dying.
Yeah, yesterday.
It was dying, Mark.
The Seahawks, you know, just registered their own protest. And now, you know, you're seeing the, how should you put it? The 30%, the people that are still in his base, the people that he really literally could stand in the middle of Fifth Avenue and gun down and they would I'm sure he meant well as he was shooting me at random, you know. He's a great man. So those guys are like trying to mount this big boycott, which I think is going to be a spectacular failure. And they've galvanized this whole conversation again. And here's the thing that really strikes me about this. You know, they did some polls just of Trump supporters, to try to get a sense of, you know, how they view the world and what they think about themselves. These guys overwhelmingly self-identify as conservative Christians, and they overwhelmingly believe that they are the most persecuted group in the United States. And it's all about religious persecution. You know, the liberals are coming for them. And so the proof of this is Starbucks coffee cups. And if you, this Christmas, if you go to the store and the clerk says, Happy holidays instead of Merry Christmas. Well, you know, this is the harbinger of the apocalypse, right? Yeah, you're on the way to the arena. They're going to take you away and this is all religious persecution. Well, here's the thing. And these guys adored, you know, guys like Tim Tebow ironically for kneeling down. You know, well, what's never mentioned because he's a black guy and so it can't really be true. Kaepernick is a Christian. And this is, part of this is, his expression of his religious convictions, about the racist treatment of black people by police and all the rest of it. And for some reason, he has this impression that Trump is a racist. Who knows why?
Why would he think Trump is a racist?
It's a mystery. But, you know, what you never hear from these people who are wetting themselves over coffee cups and clerks saying happy holidays, is you don't hear one syllable about Kaepernick being persecuted for his religious convictions.
Of course, Kaepernick has articulated pretty beautifully, why he didn't stand for the pledge last year. What he said was, the flag represents an ideal that we're not living up to, because we still have this problem of, discrimination. And I'm going to stand. And he said, first he said, I'm kneeling to honor the troops. And then he said, because prior, if people don't realize, before Kaepernick started kneeling, he would just sit on the bench. Mm. And so he basically said he wanted to do some sort of gesture that was, honorific while at the same time, you know, voicing a protest. So the kneeling to him was a better solution than just sitting on the bench.
Interesting. I didn't know that.
So Oh yeah. So he said, look, I want to do it in the most honorable way possible, but I also want to call us to live up to the ideals of what America actually is supposed to represent.
Mm-hmm.
And that, Mark, is construed as a guy who hates his country.
You know, there's a famous quote by G.K. Chesterton.
A guy who says the flag is of a higher standard of what we're worthy of right now, and we need to live up to what the flag represents.
Yeah.
That guy is being construed as a guy who disrespects the flag.
Disrespects
a guy
the
who
flag.
Says we're not worthy of our flag.
Yeah.
Is saying that we're disrespecting. It's
unbelievable.
Orwellian doublespeak 1984 style.
Yeah, it is. It's really weird.
The guy who's honoring the flag more than anyone is being told that he's disrespecting the flag. It's unreal.
Yep. Well, you know, Socrates is called an atheist. Because yes. He was saying, you know, reverence the God. You're not doing it. And what I was going to say is there's a quote from G.K. Chesterton. He said famously, my country, right or wrong, is like saying my mother drunk or sober.
Right.
And that's really it. You know, patriots have famously suffered because they wanted their country to be better. One such patriot said, Jerusalem, Jerusalem, you who stone the prophets and kill those sent to you, how I have longed to gather you together as a hen gathers chicks under her wings, but you would not. Behold, your house is left to you desolate. And, you know, that's the cry of a patriot. Read Jeremiah. That's the cry of a patriot. And Jeremiah, by the way, got exactly the same flack.
Well,
you know, you hate your country, right?
Yeah, and Jeremiah said, you know, don't say this is the temple of the Lord, the temple of the Lord, the temple of the Lord, because they were using the temple as some sort of lucky charm.
Right.
That was some sort of going to, like, be an asbestos suit against the judgment of God because of their sin.
Right.
And so instead of them saying, yeah, we shouldn't use the temple that way, they said, this guy is speaking against the temple. No!
Yes.
He said you weren't worthy of the temple. That's what he was saying.
Yes, of course.
He was speaking against the temple. He was honoring the temple by saying you weren't worthy of it.
Yeah.
And this is what Kaepernick is doing. He's not speaking against the flag. And it's amazing because if you actually listen to the initial interview, he kept saying we. Like, he wasn't saying you white people need to change. He kept saying we because
he's an American.
We're all in this together as a nation.
Right.
Right. No. It's amazing to me that, you know, the colonists, you know, America was a colony of Great Britain.
Right.
Which meant that their loyalty was initially supposed to be to the crown.
Mm-hmm.
And so all these founding fathers that these people celebrate were people who actually revolted against their nation.
Right.
As a matter of fact, if during the American Revolution, the folks who said, no, I don't want to join and fight Britain were called loyalists because they were loyal to Britain.
Right.
And so it's this crazy kind of, when white people stand up against tyranny and dishonor a flag of people who are oppressing them, quote unquote, mm-hmm. they are heroes and founding fathers.
Right.
But when black people do it, they are ungrateful thugs who need to be fired and all the rest of it. And, you know, this guy burned Kaepernick's jersey in effigy. And when you think about the history of lynching in this nation, the type of optics that creates. And we've got a president seeing all this stuff and stoking the flames of this stuff. It's unreal.
Well, and, you know, the sort of quasi, you know, pastor of America right now is a guy named Robert Jeffress. He's along with Paula White. He is like.
Isn't that the guy that said that Trump could take out Kim Jong-un?
He said that God said that it would be fine for him to, you know, take out Korea. But he also just said, I'm not making this up. He said that, black players who take the knee should consider themselves lucky that they have not yet been shot in the head. Or I don't know if he said shot in the head, but not yet been shot. I noted this on my Facebook page, and I immediately got a response from somebody saying they should be shot. I'll tell you, I don't have a doubt in the world that the person who wrote that considers themselves a pro-life Christian, you know.
Of course.
You know,
and
but,
not racist at all.
Not racist, you know, at all. But, but the thing
Dallas
is that
Robert Jeffress says kneeling NFL players would be shot in the head.
Oh yeah. Shot in the head. For kneeling. For an expression of free speech that's protected by the Constitution.
Okay, so here's what he said. Here's what he said. He said, Robert Jeffress, I'm sorry if I didn't pronounce your name correctly, Pastor. First Baptist Dallas said Monday that NFL players kneeling to protest during the national anthem should thank God that they don't have to worry about being shot in the head like they would be in North Korea.
Which, by the way, has compulsory flag worship.
Well, in my video, I said, you know, this fascist idea that you unless you pledge allegiance to the flag, that something bad should happen to you.
Yeah.
And as I said that, I did the Sieg Heil, the Nazi salute, because
right.
this is fascism. This is Nazism. This
right.
is North Korea.
Yeah.
And the irony of that quote, the context, the irony of that quote is Trump is foisting the seeds that make the trees of a North Korea or a Nazi Germany.
Right.
Those things don't happen overnight. It's this initial thing where you have to pledge fealty to the state.
Right.
Without any conditions.
Yeah.
And that's how you create fascist states. They don't fall out of heaven.
And
don't ascend from hell overnight.
The state is identified.
In the ground.
The state is identified, always with the person of the dear leader. You know, whether he's a Mussolini or what. And that's very much, you know, the mindset that's behind. When I listen, I hear it from Trump, certainly, but what's really disturbing to me, and it's especially disturbing that it comes from people who name themselves to be, you know, serious conservative Orthodox Christians and so forth, it's they who are the most passionate defenders of a cult of personality, you know? It's they who are saying we have no king but Caesar, that anything that disputes what the dear leader says is ipso facto a lie because it disagrees with the dear leader. And, you know, here's a quote from Trump. You can actually hear him saying it because we have electronic media that allow you to actually hear his voice, you know? It doesn't matter.
Right.
That's, you know, that's an alternative fact. I reject that he said this, and besides, whoever's reporting it. And so there's that, but also with that, and I find this so sinister. The argument that's put forward, is that, I think I've been pronouncing his name wrong. You can tell, by the way, I lack the sports gene, so I never pay attention to sports. The only reason I've noticed this is because of the imposition that it's made on the teaching of the faith. So it's Kaepernick, not Kaepernick?
Yeah, it's Kaepernick.
Kaepernick,
yeah.
Okay. Sorry, my apologies. Yeah. But Jeanine Pirro, who shows up on Fox to pontificate about stuff, gave this rant. And the essence of the rant was, he's spoiled because he's really rich because of football pays you well. And so because he's really rich, he has no right to complain. And the sinister part of it was this country allowed him to get
yes.
rich. And it's like, no, yeah. this country
so
did not allow him to get rich because, as Kennedy put it, the rights of man come not from the generosity of the state, but from the hand of God.
Yeah.
But the idea that, you know, what you're saying to somebody whose ancestors were slaves is we allowed you to
right.
make money and get a job and do what you're good at. It's like, you get that when you say that, you are verifying everything that he's protesting about, right? No, they don't get that.
Well, yeah, ancestors were slaved and grandmother, grandfather were sitting in the back of the bus getting bitten by dogs in the March on Washington. Look,
yeah.
this is the amazing double standards that happens, unfortunately, with my white Republican brethren. when a white person becomes a multimillionaire, it's because they work their tail off and use the, you know, the American dream. Nobody ever says that the white guy was allowed to do anything.
Right.
He was just a, you know, grinded out Protestant work ethic guy who, you know, never took advantage of the poor or anything like that to make his millions.
Right.
But, you know, he made his millions. But anytime, you know, it's a black dude who has a nerve, they get really angry. They're like, you don't see this happening in Africa.
Right.
Why don't you see multimillionaires in Africa? You know, of course, the response is it might have to do with the fact that you went to South Africa.
Yeah.
And you raped the land of all the natural resources and took the best for yourself and instituted apartheid all across that continent. That might be one of the reasons you don't see a lot of black millionaires coming out of Africa.
Right.
I mean, good job. But yeah, I mean, it's the double standards are crazy. And you know what else is crazy? I was talking to one of these folks yesterday, and I reiterated that Kaepernick was being actually very respectful. And the guy goes, okay, well, was your mother perfect? And of course the argument was going to be, shouldn't you respect your mother even though she's not perfect? And I said, did you just make a correlation between the state and my mother? And he said, yes. He said, there is absolutely a correlation. And I said, this is unbelievable. Don't we usually accuse leftists of creating a nanny state?
Right.
And here you are trying to make a correlation between the state and my mother.
Well, you know what they're saying to Kaepernick, in essence? They're saying, you didn't build that.
Yeah, that's right. Very good. Very good. Yes.
Yeah.
That is exactly what they're saying to Kaepernick. You didn't build that.
Yeah.
It was Massa gave you the opportunity to work there. So here's the other last thing I'll say about this whole Trump thing is that just like Clinton's sycophants won't hold her accountable for the horrible campaign that she ran in which she lost to a guy that had less votes, process this, Mark, less votes than Mitt Romney.
Yeah.
He had less votes than Mitt Romney.
Yes.
And she still lost.
She still lost.
And instead of holding her accountable and the DNC accountable for what they did to Bernie Sanders, they blame Bernie Sanders.
Yep.
Well, it's the same. I said, I talked to one of these guys yesterday. I said, can you not just hold Trump accountable and say that his foolish, antics in Alabama continue this movement and blew it up bigger than it was. Can you just hold them accountable? Nope.
Yeah.
I actually had a guy, yesterday say that, Obama was to blame for Charlottesville.
Well, you know, and that, again, that's.
I said, what? What do you mean? How is that possible? And the logic is Obama is to blame for Charlottesville because he divided the country wrong along racial lines. And I said, so there was no Nazis or KKK before Obama? And he goes, did you see them in the streets? And I said, don't you think it might have something to do with the candidate who started his presidential run by his xenophobic statement about Mexicans? Would that have emboldened a person with a Nazi mentality? No, it was Obama. Okay.
It was Obama. Well, and that's the thing, you know, I mean, here's the deal, the one thing I will give to the Democratic Party is that it has always said, I mean, it's been saying since FDR, the state has a real role, which by the way is Catholic teaching as well, that the state has a real role to play in ensuring the common good because the common good is justice and it's the job of the state to ensure justice. So fine. Okay. Great. The GOP has insisted that it is the party of personal responsibility.
Right.
And it absolutely refuses to take any responsibility ever.
Yeah.
I watched all through the election, you know, that the rise of Donald Trump was really Hillary's fault. In fact, Trump was a stealth candidate who was put forward by Hillary.
Right.
This is all somebody else's fault. Yes, we're voting for him, but it's not our fault. We can't help it. Everything that he's doing is always somebody else's fault.
Yeah.
And so Charlottesville, that was really Obama's fault. Take some friggin' responsibility.
Yeah. It's uncanny.
Yeah.
I said, you can't be, this guy is a, pretty popular evangelical guy in certain subcultures. And I told him, I said, do not say any of this stuff publicly because that's all you'll be dealing with for the rest of your life because this is just, full blown racism.
He should say it publicly. I think he should say it publicly and really put himself out there so that everyone could see.
Yeah, get him on the show.
Yeah, say these things. The only danger to that, of course, is that his flock will go, awesome.
Right.
God approves of racism. Good,
Yeah.
And besides, the notion that unless you are actually lynching somebody, you're not a racist.
Yes.
I think is very deeply bred. And the fact that, the base of Trump and the Christians that I've been talking to repeatedly can look at him, watch him say, some Nazis are very fine people. And at the same time, calling people who are doing nobody any harm and exercising their First Amendment rights, sons of bitches, and say,
with a lot of anger.
Yeah. And
I mean, did you see it?
And
legit anger.
Yo, yeah. There was a lot of rage in that. And the response of Christians who ought to know better, but don't, they say, I don't see anything racist about that. It's just, how can you not see that? But they can't see it. And, it's a real problem that we face. Ultimately for me, this comes back, this is not ultimately a political issue. For me, this is, a spiritual issue and it has everything to do with the witness of the church. The witness of the church, Paul's phrase in Romans 2:24, God's name is blasphemed among the Gentiles because of you.
Because of him. I was literally just saying it at the same exact verse.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right.
And that's what I look at, and what I've always looked at with this stuff is that, I heard people saying, I watched Catholics saying, if we vote for Hillary, then we face persecution, and that would be the worst thing ever. And the witness of the gospel is emphatically that the worst thing ever is not the first death, it is the second death. Now, I don't think Hillary Clinton is going to kill anybody. I think the people that imagined that there was going to be persecution and, people thrown in gulags and all this kind of stuff, that's crazy talk, But
How many people died in demonstrations on the street during the Obama administration?
I have no idea. I don't think any,
Zero.
Yeah, zero.
Remember the Tea Party? Remember the Tea Party? Anybody die in any of those Tea Party demonstrations?
Yeah,
no.
Right. That doesn't happen.
You were allowed to have tea. But we didn't get into 4 months of a Trump administration. We already have a fatality.
Yes. And more than that, this is
talking about people dying, you're more likely to die under a polarized, violent America.
Right.
Which Trump is, and it's not all him. I get that.
Of course not.
Antifa didn't start during the Trump administration. I get that. But the president, the leader is supposed to be a mediating voice. When you're a parent and you've got two kids at each other's throats, you don't jump in and take a side and say, get him.
Get him. Kill him,
You're supposed to kind of like grab them both by the nape of the neck and separate them.
That's right.
You're not supposed to take one side and pile on the other one.
And you also don't leave them to fight with each other and say, I'm going to be over here burning down the neighbor's house.
And threaten the neighbor in front of the entire neighborhood.
Yeah.
This is where we are.
That's crazy talk.
Awesome.
And so for me, what it comes back to, what I kept hearing from people who were, sounding this panic button about how, electing Hillary was electing Diocletian. Actually, there was actually, I'm not making that up. It was a Catholic writer named John Zmirak who actually wrote an article in which he compared Hillary to Diocletian and Trump. I am not making this up. You're going to be amazed. He compared Trump to Constantine. He is going to save the church, right?
And by this side, conquer. It's a dollar sign.
Yeah. And so what Jesus says in the gospel is, do not be afraid of those who can kill the body. Be afraid of those who can kill both body, destroy both body and soul in hell. In other words, the great danger that Jesus warns against has never been persecution. The great danger Jesus warns against is seduction. And
at the end of Revelation.
Yeah.
At the end of Revelation, the folks who end up in the lake of fire are those who practice magic arts, adulterers, and cowards, the cowardly.
Okay.
End up in the lake of fire.
Okay.
So if you think about this, if Revelation 21:8, the cowardly, the unbelieving, the vile, the murderers, the sexually immoral, which Trump is like 3 out of 5 of those.
But he's really good at making fun of POWs, though. I mean,
he elected a vile, sexually immoral murderer.
That's just locker room talk. That was just locker room talk.
Because of our cowardice.
Yeah.
Well, Revelation 21:8 says all you guys are going to the lake of fire.
Oh, well, you know.
Of course, I'm not making a salvific statement, but I mean, if that at the core of your being is the reason why you voted for Trump is because you want to avoid persecution.
Right.
Good night.
Yeah.
it's unreal.
Yeah.
It's unreal.
Yeah, it's incredible. Well,
so tell me, so Hillary, what was it? Hillary was Diocletian.
Hillary was Diocletian, and Trump was the Constantine.
Who was Trump?
Constantine.
Oh my Lord.
He's going to save the church from persecution at the hands of Hillary Clinton.
He's going to call the next council in Nicaea.
You betcha. Trump. Yes, that is a true thing that is really going to happen.
Did somebody really say that?
Yes. Yes, a Catholic writer named John Zmirak. He wrote that for the stream. You can go find that article online. It's breathtaking. And
get him on the show. Get him on the show.
Oh, I think not.
Get him on the show after a year.
You can have him on Cell 53. What?
Probably not.
Okay.
My audience wouldn't know any of these people anyway.
It is your destiny. Okay.
Who, okay, so help me out with this. St. Catherine of Siena. I'm changing lanes here.
Okay. It's Catherine of Siena.
So let me give you my impression. So when the Pope is speaking ex cathedra, I mean, it's de fide. That's it. Right?
Right. It's very rare in the life of the church.
Extremely rare. So if he's not speaking ex cathedra, it's open season. You can diss the Pope. You can call him a quasi heretic. You can discipline him. You can.
No, none of that is true.
The
Pope is a shepherd. He's a bishop. His job is to help interpret the tradition. And part of what that means, in the day to day, you know, rough and tumble of life in the church is trying to navigate, you know, the flux of history where things change and stuff is going on and you're, the church is always sort of perpetually, you know, riding the tiger, if you will, trying to, you know, navigate history. So in the course of it, he called a synod, that is a meeting of bishops, to talk about the problem of presenting the gospel, and particularly bringing the gospel to bear on the situation of the family in the postmodern world, which, as you may have noticed, is massively screwed up.
Sure.
So what do we do? How do we do this? You know, and so he held a synod on the family, and the way a synod works is the synod meets and they sort of sort out what it is we need to think about, talk about, and then they write some recommendations. They to the Pope, and the Pope takes all this input from the church, and digests it, and then comes out with teaching. And the teaching is typically not, we're not looking at dogma here. You know, no article of faith is being decided. Nothing like that is happening. What's happening is, you know, picture a yellow pad, full of, you know, points that we need to think about, you know, and so we got the problem of divorce and remarriage, and you got the problem of blended families, you got the problem of gay families and kids who are being raised in, you know, all these complicated family situations and all the rest of it. It's all the stuff that you have to deal with as a pastor as well.
Yeah.
And so what do you do? Well, it turns out that in the enormous complexity of the family, there aren't one-size-fits-all answers to every weird, complicated family arrangement that you've got. You know, so you've got the husband with a daughter whose wife left him for another woman. What do you do with that family, you know? And he's having doubts about his faith and, you know, and all the rest of it. And so, and that's just like one, you know, one sample of the enormous complexity. So, the Pope came out with a document called Amoris Laetitia. The document is basically written for shepherds. It's not for general consumption. It wasn't intended to be. It's kind of a set of very flexible guidelines for here's how you might approach the enormous complexity of the family. And so this set off this big firestorm, from people who, frankly, have hated that guy's guts from the moment he was elected. And they think that here, right, finally, in this obscure footnote, they have found the thing where they can finally nail him. And, so.
Yeah, I forgot what the term was.
Dubia. Yeah. So dubia are very common events in the life of the church. So the church teaches something, and somebody in the church says, I'm not clear on this. Could you clarify this? So dubium. I'm dubious about this. And,
right.
So then, you know, they send out.
So give us clarity.
Yeah. And so that happened. So there were four cardinals who sort of led this charge. And in fact, they got a response from the Pope, but they weren't happy with it. So they just kind of kept bugging him. Well, at some point, Francis appears to have decided, you know what? You guys aren't asking questions in order to find things out anymore. You're asking questions in order to keep from finding things out. What's really happening here? Is an attack on my pontificate. And so his response has been, now, silence. He's basically, I got other things to do, so I'm going to let you guys worry about this. And so.
But he did respond initially, though.
He did respond, and that's the thing. Right. And so he did, but they're not happy with that because there are other things going on. And in addition to that, there's also like the whole crowd that's like, you know, thousands of reactionary guys around the world, who are like, you know, they want blood. And so they're all like, why won't he answer the dubium? And the response is, he has answered the dubium. His silence is the answer. And
right, what's interesting. So I follow Jennifer Robach Morse.
Okay.
She's it seems to me, a far-right Catholic. I'm saying this affectionately because I learn a lot from her.
Okay.
And she engaged me in this Amoris Laetitia issue. She was actually the one who introduced it to me.
Okay.
And then I immediately said, well, what does Mark think? And oddly enough, you had been commenting on it when,
yeah,
at the height of the whole jihad. And so it was kind of this crazy moment where I was like, I really respect her, obviously respect you, and you get completely different interpretations of
actions. Welcome to the Catholic Church.
I see.
So my response to this, I don't care about
it. I was saying, well, you guys sound like Luther right now.
Yeah.
You know, which as a Protestant, you know, it's not a bad thing for me, but I was like, you guys are sounding like Luther, whereas the other guys who are saying, look, this is the Holy Father. That's it. He said it, you know, Roma Laetita est, la causa finita est. That's it. Let it go. And she was saying, well, it's not like that. And, you know, and I don't know all the machinations of this stuff. So that's why I wanted to ask you, like, Is this common, or are they just saying, they just looking at this dude as a weak person?
It's common now. Well, okay, so there's background to this. The thing is that, Francis threatens the hell out of American culture warriors because he has a charism of not being able to be ignored. He doesn't say anything really different from what, for example, Benedict the 16th had to say. Did you know that Benedict the 16th, did you know that Benedict the 16th actually praised democratic socialism? There's a little secret you didn't know. Yes, he did.
No, I did not know.
In fact, he said it was highly compatible with Catholic teaching. Now, that's not the sort of thing that normally gets heard.
you had a great quote from Fulton Sheen where he said, we need to attack capitalism when it's like at the expense of the poor, and we need to attack socialism when it's at the expense of like a person's civil liberties. It was a brilliant quote.
Yeah, it was. It was a great quote.
He's not saying many things differently than Benedict would.
He's not saying anything different from what Benedict said, and he's not saying anything different from what John Paul said.
But he just has this charism of everybody listens to what
he has a knack for being heard on these things, and so he, from the moment he was elected, he scared the living hell out of the right, and they have always hated this guy. And so there's that dynamic going on. Well, the thing that came out yesterday, this filial correction thing, is not from the Dubia Cardinals. They had nothing to do with this. So there's only two. There were four Dubia Cardinals. Two of them are dead now. They're old, right? I mean, one of them was in his 80s. The other one was 79, and you know, old guys die. But even that, you know, one of
the Da Vinci people to get that one.
Well, one of the weird things that you immediately heard from the kooks who, you know, are really obsessed with this stuff is, you know, maybe Francis is having them killed.
I knew it. We have the same kooks in Protestants.
Oh, yeah. I mean, how should you put it? Different expressions, but same pathologies.
So we have the filial correction, or a different group than the...
The filial correction is this document that is put out essentially by this fringe of super, sometimes just like off the chart far right guys. So...
Are these the SSPX guys?
Yes, exactly right. SSPX and so guys who are in like schism or quasi-schism with the church, kooks who like, you know, Holocaust denier guys, you know, and really fringe
crazy
weirdos, you know. And so they came out with this thing, which I haven't bothered to read because why should I possibly care? You know.
Now, isn't it my understanding that Benedict brought them back into formal communion? SSPX?
He was trying. I'm not sure what the status of all that is. He bent over backwards, I think, to try to bring these guys back into communion with the church. And I think at the last minute they spit in his face because that's what these guys do.
I pretty much read something where Benedict said, "Look, you have your Latin Mass. I'm glad you like the Latin Mass."
Yeah.
Blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, well, he did do that. He authorized what's called the extraordinary form. Essentially, it's the Latin Mass.
Right.
Do you want to know who the first person on planet Earth was to, order implementation of the Latin Mass when Benedict authorized it?
It was the current Pope, right?
His name was Jorge Bergoglio. That's right. And you know you know what kind of response he got for that? They hated him for doing it because it wasn't perfect. It wasn't done the way that they thought it should be done. And we're talking about so there's a reason.
Are never going to be happy.
They're never going to be happy, right? So
free Vatican II Catholicism. Other than that,
the year that Benedict was elected in November of 2013 at Buenos Aires Cathedral, they held a memorial. To commemorate Kristallnacht. And all these guys, you know, these kooks who, don't forget, that these people really are, in some cases, actual Nazis. That's where Nazis went after the war was over, was to Argentina.
Right.
And so some of these guys showed up at Buenos Aires Cathedral in the middle of the Kristallnacht commemoration and were screaming in the faces of Jews to get out and all the rest of it. So this is this is Francis's experience of super radical traditionalism. So he doesn't care a lot about what that crowd thinks, right?
So this is the group that drafted the filial correction.
Yeah, that kind of subculture is behind that. It's not just those guys. It was a kind of a, you know, global thing, not just some cranks in, I don't know if any of them were Argentinian actually, but
it's the same subculture.
It's that super reactionary subculture. And the thing to get is that, you know, as an evangelical, or, well, you're not an evangelical, but as a Protestant pastor, you're, orientation is toward evangelization, toward, you know, go out into the highways and byways and, you know, bring in the crippled and the blind away. That's, you know, that's what the gospel is supposed to be about. That's what John Paul II was strongly about. That's what this pope is strongly about. This pope is, I always tell people who are baffled by him, it's very simple to grasp what he's about. You can summarize it in the words, he has preached good news to the poor. That's it. That's his whole pontificate. If you want to understand what he's doing, he's all about evangelization. Well, reactionaries like these guys hate evangelization. Why? Because it brings in the riffraff. It brings in people who don't care about the Latin Mass, who have no history of worrying about Vatican II, who don't care about any of that stuff. Because what are they? They're screwed up people who are looking for Jesus. Like, you know, that's what evangelization is ordered toward, is, you know, go out and find the desperate and the people who are hungry for God and the people who's, you know, who are struggling with opioid addictions and whose family is a mess and who have wrecked their lives. That's the church's ordered, and so also ordered toward, you know, refugees, among other things. Well, you know, so you've got there's a real fundamental disconnect, going on in the church between Francis's vision of the church, which is, you know, the Spirit's vision of the church, that we are to be an evangelizing community. Versus a reactionary approach to the church, which sees the church as a fortress, and our mission is to pour boiling oil on anybody who approaches the ramparts. And our vision is to, and in addition, the reactionary vision is to root out the fifth columnists, the subversives, the viruses, in the body of Christ, expel the heretics, find the impure, kick out the heretics. And that's what this filial correction is, because Francis is the chief heretic. He's the problem. And these people see themselves as anointed by God to defend the church from the Pope.
Okay.
And that's the dynamic. That's what's happening.
So he's just going to ignore it. So how does
he's going to blow this off? He will respond to this by doing nothing.
How does St. Catherine of Siena factor into the whole situation?
Well, St. Catherine of Siena was a 14th century saint who, when the church went into schism, so it was a complicated mess. So a pope died, some cardinals elected a new pope, and then decided, well, we don't like this guy that we just elected, so they elected somebody else. And the first pope said, no, I'm the pope, right? You elect another guy, right? And so this other guy claimed to be the pope as well, and then they, you know, it got more messy before it got better, and there was a third guy that somebody picked as well. And, so anyway, the real pope winds up in Avignon, in southern France. He leaves Rome for a while. partly because he's looking for political protection from the King of France, and that's where Avignon is. So Catherine of Siena is a mystic. She only lives to be 33 years old. She's a Dominican. And she starts, among other things, she's one of these people with this, and this happens from time to time. You will get, well, you saw this, for example, with Mother Teresa. Just this small person, but who lives this intensely holy life that just winds up drawing the attraction of the world. People could just see what kind of a person she was. Catherine of Siena was one of those kind of people. And so, anyway, she has she leaves behind a number of works. One is called The Dialogue with God the Father, where she has these sort of mystical locutions where she talks to God. And in the course of her life, she starts writing advice to the Pope, who she sort of, you know, she talks to him, you know, and addresses him with these sort of affectionate terms, you know, not quite, you know, boopsy, but it's sort of like that, you know, very, very affectionate terms. And she tells him, among other things, to get out of Avignon and come back to Rome, because you're the Bishop of Rome. So, you know, come on, Pope, do what you're supposed to do. And so she winds up sending essentially corrections to the Holy Father, always done with respect and affection and that sort of thing.
Well,
every reactionary who hates the
Pope, they're self-styled St. Catherines now.
Yeah, and so they all imagine that they're St. Catherine of Siena, or they're St. Paul talking to Peter. You know, God has anointed them to tell the Pope to shape up and do what they want, you know. And so it's one of the things that Mary Pozzullo, who writes Steel Magnificat, it's a blog over Pathos, was saying was, you know, these guys that imagine that they're all Catherine of Siena, they always like the bossing the Pope around part of their mission, but you never see them go to a prison and kiss the severed head of a criminal, which is something that Catherine of Siena did. Or, you know, bathing lepers or drinking the dirty water from, you know, bathing, you know, people with running sores, which is something that Catherine of Siena did as a penance. She was a badass. And
Yeah, for sure.
So, you know,
I think.
Yeah,
I think.
So that's the thing about Catherine of Siena.
Or the 39 minus 1 that Paul was dealing with, or the shipwrecks, or the, but they're going to go and rebuke publicly.
They got it all figured out, and so they're going to go kick the Pope around and, you know, call him a heretic.
Yeah. It's like, well, we got social media now, so there's got to be a reason.
Yeah. it's a brand new problem in the life of the church. You know, 100 years ago, what did some Irish meatpacker in Chicago know about, you know, some quarrel that Leo the 13th was having with some cardinal? Nothing, right?
Yeah.
No, but now, you know, you get these experts who, you know, who get on Facebook and they read something that Francis said and that's it. He's a heretic because, you know, some guy with a meme told me so. And,
Yeah,
it's a brand new problem in the life of the church.
Oh, what a world! What a world!
What a
okay,
world!
Okay, that brings a ton of context. Yeah, I've been watching this whole situation develop, and so I've been talking to some of these, you know, conservative folks. I really can't deal with the SSPX folks, because I want to be able to take people seriously.
Yeah, but, well, they don't like you anyway, so it doesn't matter. They, you know.
Also true. Yeah.
See, I'm the guy that's going to be there for you when you're received into the church, but they're going to be the guys who are protesting that you shouldn't come in. So, you know, I just
bit of the new Protestant.
I'm there because I care, Andrew.
Right.
So.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I guess this is goodbye until.
Okay.
Which is probably tomorrow, so I'll see you tomorrow.
All right, yeah. Well, I want to thank you so much for being on the show.
Yeah, good show.
It was fun.
I, Yeah. And of course, you know, the scripture says we got to pray for our leaders and all that good stuff. And so I don't want to, you know, I told somebody, I said, look, the scripture says fear God, honor the king, or honor the emperor. And mm-hmm. I think it's 1 Peter. So, you know, I want that to be the end of the show where we honor the emperor.
Well, and indeed we should, you know.
So I want to honor the emperor, but I also want to say that John the Baptist honored his emperor by, you know, calling him to repentance. And
yeah.
So
yeah.
We've got to find a way for the next 4, and if we repent 4, but if not 8 years. To find a way to honor our emperor when he's making it extremely difficult to, not even from a moral perspective, just on a comedic level, to honor him.
Yeah.
Because we're trying our best to follow sacred scripture.
So, yeah. Well,
so,
that's,
we honor you, emperor, but, please help us.
Yeah.
We need help.
Well, and I gotta say, a couple of points I thought, Trump did a good job, by and large with the, hurricane, with the disaster relief. You know, he did the thing that, the leader is supposed to do at a time like that. He showed up and handed out some sandwiches and, you know,
yep.
and just kind of let the machinery of, you know, the rescue guys do what they do, you know. And so bravo for that. Gave him $1 million. Good for that. I'm, you know, good for you. And, so,
yeah.
You know, credit where credit is due. Now help Puerto Rico, please.
Cause we really need it.
Oh, by the way, before I go off the air, one thing I want to say is if you're looking for ways to help Puerto Rico, Catholic Relief Services, they're on the ground. They're doing the things.
Is there a Facebook account for them or a website?
Oh, I'm sure there is. Yeah. Or, you know, if you Google Catholic Relief Services, they're there. And, so you can help them there. My guess is that Mercy Corps is probably also helping out, down there.
I'm Googling it right now.
And they do good work.
Mitt Romney just said, let's forget about this stuff and focus on Puerto Rico, please.
Yeah. Good for him, you know? So yeah. Anyway, well, before we go, here's an idea. How about we offer a prayer for Donald Trump and all those guys that are in charge? Shall we?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Amen. Father, you say that we are to pray for the king, pray for our leaders. So we lift up Donald Trump to you and everybody else, especially in the executive branch, who's in charge of getting things done, that they would get things done in Puerto Rico and every other place that's affected by the hurricanes and the storms, and that you would spare us any further storms, that these people would not have to endure another hurricane. And I also want to thank you for bringing Andrew into my circle of friends, and thank you for this chance to get together and chat. So anything you wanted to add?
Yeah, Father, I just like, God, I pray that in the midst of all this craziness that we would focus on you and bring more people to you. And I thank you for bringing Mark into my life. God, I pray for our president and the people that he influences and the people in our circle of influence, God, that we would just show your love and show your kindness, and that through that you would bring many to repentance. In the name of the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. Amen.
Amen. All right. Thanks, man. I'm sure we will have you back one of these days. In the meantime, you've been listening to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea, and we'll be back again soon enough. Bye-bye.